substance equals spurn. The propaganda's a win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
Welcome to One of 200, the politics and media podcast, coming to you live-ish from Aotearoa. I'm joined by my co-host, Simone. How are you doing, Simone?
Kia ora, Kyle. Morena. This is, I think, my first time podcasting coffee-less, and also there's nobody else to rely on, which is daunting because I don't know things.
Alas. Well, we do have a very special guest. Joining us again, friend of the cast, Angela. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm very well, thank you. Loving life in this year of our Lord 2025. Everything's good.
I can't believe you're saying that when the Pope lies dead on the ground.
Are you coming to us from the holy city of Wellington, or?
Yep. Yes, yeah. Still white smoke rising from the beehive. Actually, no, I shouldn't be making those jokes on a podcast.
It's a city important to at least three religions, I think. The public service, cafe owners, and... landlords, I'm hearing. Heritage landlords for these beautiful mansion villas.
Yeah, it's a bit of a changing of the guard. I don't know. It's obviously like a big international event, I guess you call it, whenever someone like the Pope dies. But it feels as if there's too much happening in the world now. Like, I remember previous popes had a fair bit more coverage, even just in New Zealand news. I don't know if that's just because everything's so off the wall these days, or...
I think it's because you're not allowed to talk about the crimes of America anymore, right? And the fact is that J.D. Vance fully murdered the Pope. And if we start talking about how the you know, vice president, you know, our close strategic partner, just is wandering around the world straight up killing people, then Pope's that makes our whole defense of the rules-based order look a bit weak. So we just can't mention it, you know?
They need a sequel to The Young Pope called The Woke Pope.
Was he the woke pope? Like, not saying that you're saying that he was.
Have you met the other popes, Kyle?
Oh,
he was
geez.
The woke pope.
His predecessor was, after all, a member of Hitler Youth as a child. Like,
yeah, wow.
John Paul II and Benedict were both like pedophiles incorporated. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Wow, really? Yeah, really interesting where the line is drawn on woke these days, isn't it?
Yeah, slightly less child abuse. That's woke.
All right, no wonder ACT party is going after ECE regulations.
for legal reasons, the two sentences are unconnected with each other.
I don't know. I'm suggesting it's opinion. It's fair and frank opinion. I'm not making any other claims beyond that.
I'm advising a minister when I say somebody should look through the logs.
I mean, what does ACT stand for again? The Association of Child Touchers?
Yeah, that's right.
That is what it stands for. I hear. But
somebody said that in a woke bar to me.
Someone said it in a woke cafe to me, so it looks like it is going around. Do we think this changes anything? So, you know, one of the, I guess, main geopolitical, I don't know if roles is the right word, but impacts of the Pope is he was pretty forthright about calling what was happening in Gaza a genocide. He was in regular contact with people there and in the West Bank. Does it matter? Like, is that important? And will a Pope diverging from that markedly have any effect?
Well, I think it both does and doesn't matter, right? Like, on the one hand, when there is, like, just trying to think of other global North leaders who have actually been like, yeah, this is a genocide and it's very bad. And aside from, like, Michael Martin in Ireland, when there are so few, like, there is value in having somebody who is a voice for that. But at the same time, right, like, as much as it was, you know, like, the stuff he was doing in terms of staying in touch and being like a bit of a connection to the rest of the world for Catholics in Gaza itself while the genocide was happening. Like, the president who sponsored the genocide in the first half was a Catholic, and the vice president who's sponsoring the continuation of the genocide is also a Catholic. So while it's nice to have somebody who is performing the rituals, if you know, like, oh, we care about this, this is bad, it doesn't really seem to have had much impact on the Catholics themselves, who, as I understand, are the Pope's primary constituents. And it hasn't seemed to stop them from, in any way, you know, continuing their full-throated support for the genocide. So I don't know. I think it's hard to say, to be honest.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I can certainly imagine it being worse, but yeah, I guess any early, early bets on who we're seeing next?
I mean, I'm not nearly enough
What?
into
You were brought on
Catholic lore.
as a Catholic guest who knows all the Catholic
Oh, it's
history.
it, it's actually it's high Anglicanism. That's my I look, it's very easy to get the two confused. But no, I mean, I have no idea. It looks like it's not going to be like one of the really sort of deranged American cardinals. Like it does look like Pope Francis has been able to
Stack the
stack the
deck.
Congress of Cardinals while he was alive enough that it's going to be somebody who's not like directly overtly fascist. I just really want it to be wasn't like Cardinal Pietro Pizzaballa, just because I think that would be funny. But yeah, honestly, I don't know. I don't have a dog in this fight.
I think it's going to be an Italian because everybody in Rome will be itching about how they haven't had an Italian in so long, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's just going to be Italian nationalism all the way down. But heck, why not? It's anti-Italian discrimination to have someone else
You heard
in
it
the seat
first. You heard it here
through the
first.
Bishop of Rome.
I
That's
think
right.
the one thing we can all agree on is that JD Vance is a devil, a false Catholic.
And I know a big safe furniture hates to see him coming.
Or
The big
does
safe furniture lady here is like, help, he's in the corner.
it? Again. All right, moving on from the Pope. Things are pretty bad in the world at the moment.
I'm hearing this now for the first time.
Yeah, well, I like, and all power to you, staying off social media and all news networks and not talking to anybody. I think, as always, and sadly for those of us living in the West, and probably the rest of the world to a large extent, what's happening in the United States is still having oversized impact on the rest of us. You know, we were talking about tariffs a couple of episodes ago, and just the utter derangement of the Trump administration trying to throw its weight around. I don't even know what they're trying to do at this point. Show they're the big guys or something. But alongside that, you have this, I think you can't even call it like creeping fascism anymore, right? Like this accelerating overt fascism in the domestic setting as well, which in some ways is more worrying in terms of the seizure of power going forward regarding, you know, who leads the country, and how those institutions operate, as well as the permission, the ideas, and the direction that it's giving to everyone from the center right to the fascist right wing, the far right, and other Western countries who are seeing this as a sort of roadmap. And you can, you know, you can see some of the policies even here in New Zealand, which are seeking to mirror or use that policy blueprint to accelerate things in their own countries.
It seems bad. I mean, it is that interesting thing, right? And it feels sort of weird and perverse, like watching all of the shit that's happening in America, you know, sort of from relatively afar where we are in the world. And like, it's gonna sound heartless to say, and RIP to any American listeners, but like, to a large extent, right? Like, what is happening internally in America is happening internally in America, and the as awful as it is that thing of like, well, it is kind of, I don't live there. But at the same time, like, it is, as you say, it's the giving permission, and sort of like, this is the roadmap now for other parties. And I mean, you sort of mentioned on the right, but also I think on the left as well, right? Like, in terms of like, America sets sort of the Western political narrative and the discourse and like the agenda such that it is, right? And so it's not just like the fact that the right are doing the overt fascism thing in the States, which they are, is terrifying. But it's also like the, I mean, I'm loath to call them left, but the opposition party in the States is more or less just straight up capitulating to it. And that, I think, is sort of in a like political system that's less cooked and less sort of all directly further to the right. That's what's quite concerning, I think, for us. Like, we have a very American, very right-wing inspired government at the moment, right? And you know, they are importing like the vibes and sort of some of the ideas and some of the rhetoric from the States. But it's also like the Democrats, I feel, in America, if they tried to push back on this and, you know, like do the weird thing, do the like actually calling them fascists and the obstructionism and, you know, the things that you could actually do if you were sufficiently motivated to try and resist this, that would likewise set the agenda for, you know, center and center left parties around the West in terms of making this like somewhat normal and permissible behavior. But as they cling further and further to sort of process and norms and, well, sir, you can't do that kind of critiques, that equally sets the sort of agenda for, you know, the Keir Starmers and the Chris Hipkins of the world to basically do nothing and talk about, you can't do that, sir, and technically isn't that a breach of the cabinet manual, rather than being like, this is overt fascism and this is bad and we are going to resist everything they do and we're not going to keep any of it, you know, like
Yeah.
that's, yeah.
It's definitely one of those situations where we've seen this coming for a long time, right? As with a lot of like big, I guess, geopolitical movements. And I'd say perhaps a little naivete from me in terms of you always expect there to be a line where people kind of figure it out, where they stop saying, they stop doing the, oh, but why doesn't the judiciary hold them to account? Or, well, just get out and vote, folks. That's the way to fucking fix this. And start to realize, hey, actually, we probably needed to do stuff sooner. And because we didn't do stuff sooner, stuff's pretty bad now, and we should act more forcefully at this point. Because otherwise, it's going to keep happening, and they'll be on top of us before we know it. And I've definitely seen that. From people who are like just, individuals, like normal human beings, Kiwi voters, or whatever you want to fucking call them, closer to the center, right? Who have realized that this is happening and going, oh shit, okay, like that kind of liberal instinct isn't working anymore, and have become more receptive to the idea that direct action and protest is necessary here, who are willing to engage with these critiques and say, all right, okay, look, I was wrong about this. They did just keep going. The institutions didn't stop them. Voting didn't stop them, because they've got all this wealth and power and are able to like at the very least advertise more effectively. And lie to the public more effectively to tie the institutions up, right? But it seems like the further you go up towards, I guess, parliament or institutional power or, amount of capital accrued, the less willing people have been to challenge it with anything other than like pretty empty words. And I think a really good example of that is Hipkins this week saying about Winston Peters, who's frothing about like whatever again. And just trying to appeal to Christopher Luxon to pull him into
Yeah.
line, and like, what do you think that's going to do? What do you, like, the media are like more or less tied up in service of like some quite far right extremist ideas. When we come to things like transphobia, right? We know that there are people writing opinion pieces celebrating the Supreme Court in the UK's decision, right? Like, these are fascists. Like, there's no other word for it. They are at the forefront. They're getting front page headlines across mainstream media. And you think that one, appealing to Christopher Luxon, who's not even in the country most of the time these days, who has shown he's completely unable to control his coalition partners, mostly because he doesn't want to, folks,
Yeah.
who has many of these elements in his party himself, so the only possible reason to be doing it is to try and put pressure on him publicly, but you have an entire media apparatus who is just going to maybe report that you said that. But they're not going to hound Christopher Luxon in the same way that they hound a left-wing Maori MP. Like, what do you think you're doing, Chris Hipkins? Well, like, what do you think you're achieving here? But this is the mode of politics that they are just absolutely stuck in still.
Cushy seat on an NGO board, I think, is the answer to that. After all this
But
is
NGOs won't
over.
exist. NGOs aren't going to exist, mate. If you listen to your
They won't.
associates.
I don't think you understand the disconnection from reality that liberals and centrists have. They
No, this
don't
is it.
understand anything about the material forces of the world. They think everything is a series of ideas that promotes itself like a virus.
I
It's
mean,
just magical
yeah,
thinking.
like, when I talk to the man on the street, as you know, I'm very in touch with as a flat white sipping, working on the terrace kind of person. But I always find that the key concern is about government's adherence to the cabinet manual. And so, like, this is the thing. This is what's not being polled by, the biased polling companies, is they'll tell you that people are, concerned about meaningless bullshit, like the cost of living or policing or, the prison muster or something like that. But, like, that's because they never ask, how do you feel about breaches of the cabinet manual? Like, and I think this is what Chris Hipkins, like, you guys don't understand. He's tapped in to the common man at a deeper level than the rest of us, because the rest of us would just, ignorantly and sort of elitistly, I think, assume that the average working, hardworking, Kiwi, like, doesn't care, this is all beyond them type thing. But, like, as a nation, I think we've got a proud history of really caring about procedural critiques of constitutional norms.
Well, when you put it that way.
This is such a thing, but like Manama Davidson getting in trouble for saying it's a good thing that Whittaker's has like a
I was
cameo
about to raise
version
this.
of its chocolate and just being like, wow, it's really cool how brands, I guess, this is, brands is MasterCard my friend, whatever it is Taylor Swift a feminist, but like, it's certainly a silly thing to say, but like, it's not a breach, right? Like to say, this is a good thing that they're doing to their Maori versions of their chocolate, right? So people get familiarized with this language, just seeing everyday items at the supermarket. And then David Seymour openly promoting McDonald's
Oh, and other things as well. Like, this
and
has happened
other
multiple times
things.
now.
And I get it. He's a libertarian, so he really should have like an F1, like a Formula One jacket where he's got all his thing like sponsors stitched onto his jacket. In fact, that would probably help us to identify who and what he is. But it's astonishing, and they never get in trouble.
This is the thing.
And
Like,
I
that's probably the clearest example of, the kind of cabinet manual, tone policing, right? And the way that it's been weaponized by our media previously. Manawa Davidson had, like, rolling coverage about that from a really antagonistic media, and it's basically crickets. And so, knowing that, like, everyone can look at those two examples, and Chris Hipkins can do the same, and he can say, oh wait,
Well,
maybe appealing to Christopher Luxon to pull these people into line and get the media on my side to put pressure on them is not going to work.
this is the thing, though, is that I don't know that somebody like Chris Hipkins can do something like that, because, and this sort of ties it back to what we were saying before about the states and sort of my whole thing about, it's not just the right setting the tone, but it is the, putative, somewhat centre left party, not really, but like, it is them also setting the tone globally. Is that I don't genuinely believe that Chris Hipkins has had an idea of his own in the last, I don't know, 10 to 15 years of his life. Like, I think that he goes to, international meetings of Labour parties, he
Yeah,
reads,
Starmer.
papers of records, exactly, right? And that is where, he looks to what the global political discourse is doing in his little space of the center left. And he's like, okay, well, I'm just gonna copy that one to one and make it more boring. And when the tone that is set, like, this is sort of, I have this pet theory about Keir Starmer winning by default in the UK, setting the left back by about 20 years, is that when one guy manages to win by default doing sort of meaningless process critiques, and, like, we all kind of know that he won by default because the vote for the right collapsed. But what it's done is it seems to have validated in the minds of, sort of centre, allegedly left neoliberals, this idea that, oh, you just need to further embrace process and institutions and things of this nature. And, actually you can win, and never mind about any of the surrounding context to that electoral victory. And so, like, this is, I think, because that is the global tone on the, self-identified center left, such that it is, somebody like Chris Hipkins is seeing that, he's picking that up, and he's going, oh, well, I just need to continue participating in good faith, because it turns out this is a good faith contest of ideas. And, it's not. And I think it's fairly fucking obvious to anybody with like three brain cells and the capacity for original thought to figure that out. But at the same time, there is no script for, sorry, there is no script for a completely imaginationless man like Chris Hipkins to follow if he wanted to actually challenge and be like, oh, well, I don't think this is happening in good faith. I reject the premise of your question. Like,
Yeah.
this is really stupid and bad.
I think you're actually being charitable to
He,
Chris Hipkins here.
yeah, well, I, you know, it's just that even if he wanted to, which I don't think he does, but even if he wanted to, due to his complete lack of being his own man, there is nothing for him to rely on in terms of a narrative structure that would allow him to identify this as being really, really stupid. And so all he does is double down into, well, it was a meaningful and big deal where Marama Davidson promoted a bar of chocolate. So obviously the, entirely ideologically captured right-wing press is going to care about my process critique in terms of the cabinet manual. I mean, it's just delusional, but that's who he is as a person, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and it really gives a lie to this ostensible reliance on polling, or like the public mood, or even like if you say like, oh, it's about the vibes in the electorate that right wing Labourites, third way Blairite, how many different horrible words can I use to describe these people, folks on the centre left adhere to in terms of how they or what they choose to present to the public, right? Because as you say, no one really gives a shit about the cabinet manual. And yet this is what Hipkins is choosing to put out as like, this is my PR for the week. Christopher Luxon, why don't you? Actually, I'm sounding like more like a politician than Chris Hipkins by putting on a half Mike Hosking voice, which is fucked. What? No, like, I do believe that you are like, there's a level of charitability that you are offering Chris Hipkins here, because I don't think he even reads the paper of record himself. I think he's got his little fucking group of pollsters and advisors, and he sits in his office in the Beehive, and they bring in a bunch of whiteboards and flip them around and transform his office into Chris Hipkins' war room, and then they get all the papers of record and all their surveying results and all the things from the probably not even the Labour membership, but from Talbot Mills or whatever, and they put it all into a blender, and then they feed it to him like nutrient pap, and he goes, "Wow, I'm the great white hope of New Zealand society, and I think that Christopher Luxon is weak, and he can't control his coalition partners, and I have something to say about that, but
I
no theory
think
of power, no understanding of a strategy."
I was going to say, I think, the Labour staff, even if they wanted to do that sort of turn, even if that came from the top, even if they decided, hold on a minute, we have values and or, some kind of goals for those values, then I think the Labour staff as the communications experts, the media people within the party, I'm not sure they'd be capable of carrying it out. And it's not a one person endeavor. It's the leader does set the tone, but this is something where the entire party apparatus has to be capable of carrying it out. Suppose that Labour decided to hew to its name and be a working class party suddenly. It can't just do that because all of the people that they have on board are just like interchangeable, I won't say Topham Gurren style, but like they're all just professionals. They're all just white collar people who have like a certain way of perceiving marketing, and marketing labor is the same as marketing chips, like Eater chips or something like that, So I don't know that if they'd be capable of it.
Well, this is a major failure of the center left, right? Is that they've taken almost like a pre-screening film review approach to politics, where they are trying to figure out what the electorate thinks it wants instead of trying to convince the electorate that they're going to do better for them, than whichever other political party. And so they don't offer any ideas. They go, oh yes, someone said crime, so let's do a crime policy. And completely ignoring the fact that the entire media apparatus has is following the messaging of some of the most fascist groups in the country to crack down on prisoners, right? And so they go out and they go, oh, okay, so there's been lots of media noise about fucking ram raids, and how we're not beating up kids enough. So we should probably put one of those in the polling questions. It's not push polling though, because it's just what's in the vibe. And then they ask everyone about it, and everyone goes, oh yeah, now I think about it, I wouldn't like to be ram raided right in the face. Someone should do something about that. And then it's just this fucking cycle. And I don't understand how they don't understand this. I think, and you can say as much as you want. It's in their interest not to understand it, right? They're also part of the problem. They serve capital because that is the nature of Western electoral democracy or whatever you want to fucking call it. This is part of what happens under neoliberalism alongside that. However, I do believe there are some people in these institutions who do not think in that way. And I'm just, what is wrong with them? How can they not just say, oh yeah, look, it's actually, this is being confected. This is not real. This is not reality. Please, I'm begging you, literally go and talk to people on the street. Like,
But again, like I don't think, going back to, the vast majority of the people who are crafting Labour's messaging and things like that are, glorified ad people in one way or another, like fundamentally, right? Is that you can have a couple of sane people who are like, well, this is completely fucked. This is, entirely confected, like sort of whatever. But I think as Simone pointed out, like, that is kind of anathema to the professional ad types, right? Like, how does that fit into a marketable narrative? Because now I'm not selling something or trying to manage something or selling the idea of managing something, but like I'm actually directly contesting ideas and without any other playbooks to go off, because, we are talking about people who are just incredible mediocrities, like as people, right? They're not going to come up with the shit themselves primarily. And without any other sort of like global North politic for them to be following, I think that, if you were one of the very few people in the Labour Party who does like actually want to win an election and thinks that what's happening in the world is bad, like you could try all you want to be like, hey guys, listen, we have to, come to terms with the fact that this is confected. We have to reject these premises. We actually have to start, playing hardball a little bit. Everybody will sort of look at you like you're trying to explain algebra to a dog. There is no script or narrative for these professionals who are in control and sort of gatekeeping and shaping those messages to latch onto in a way that's cognizable to them and what they are sort of socialized to do. And as such, I think to a certain extent, they can't.
there's this curious thing about the institutions where they are, you're quite right, staffed with mediocrities, because there is this kind of deep insecurity from the people above them that if anybody who is actually has a modicum of talent sort of comes into the organization and or has vision and or has anything else, they need to be turfed out because they could threaten their management position. Because the idea is Labour is a sort of, not management consultancy, but it's like it's interchangeable with anything else under capitalism, right? Like Labour is a brand, Labour is a it's selling you something, right? Back to the voters. And
Well,
so
Hipkins had like cups and t-shirts for 2026 ready to go like end of last year.
oh,
He's such a
yeah,
little bitch.
I know. And so who are the kinds of people who are going to stay within that organization and who are going to rise to the top? Well, it's the people who don't threaten the institution. But more importantly, it's people who don't threaten the kind of small, petty managerial fiefdoms of the people within that institution. And so you do only get mediocre people. So I don't think they have the talent to be able to do any of this, even if they wanted to, even if they had a total change of heart, come to Jesus' Damascus moment, And the problem is that all of New Zealand's most like talented political actors and artists and stuff are like poor people living in moldy apartments who are making zines for free for like people against prisons. Like this is one of the issues with them, is that the people who are actually good at doing stuff are not the people who are allowed to get into these things, right?
Yeah, and these are also the people who are most in touch with like what is actually fucking happening in our country, right? Like, and I think You
I don't
know,
want to,
the
yeah, I don't want to hear from somebody who owns investment properties about what the cost of living is like.
who gives a
Can I just say
shit?
that on the record?
Yeah, like or XYZ, right? Like, I don't even really want to hear from Chris Hipkins about it. Like, not really. I want to hear what he's gonna fucking do about it, right? But I don't want to hear him say, "Oh yes, it's tough because butter price of butter went up for me as well, and I'm on 300,000 a year or whatever," right? Like, just absurd, absurd. But the reason that like people often get a little bit incensed with 1of200 and myself for swinging at the centre left and swinging at Hipkins and Labour in particular. But the reason this is so important, aside from the fact that we actually need to do something, but in terms of the mechanisms via which the Labour Party and its leaders move towards the centre. Especially in terms of messaging and what they accept as a policy platform, is because on the far right, they don't give a shit. And as far as the media is concerned, and as far as capital interests are concerned, they are happy to throw any person under the bus. They are happy to do outright fascism if it means that they keep what they have. And if Labour isn't actively pulling in the other direction as a major, like, for worse, as a major narrative and discourse and power balance in this space, we get Winston Peters just going all in on transphobia. And trying to entry the stuff much more forcefully into the New Zealand conversation and into the way that New Zealand does politics and creates policy. And we slowly but surely, and it is slowly at least, Labour haven't done what has happened in the UK yet. We see a shift in the entire centre, and that is really, really bad.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, not wanting to hear certain people talk about certain things, it's been a fantastic week for listening to exclusively cisgender people talk about trans rights and trans lives and all that kind of shit. It's been fascinating. We've heard from Winnie, we have heard from Corinne Dan, we've heard from, noted feminist and friend of the common person, Tracy Martin. We've heard from Lutzen, we've heard from Chippy, we've heard from Chloe, right? Haven't actually heard from a single trans person. To the best of my knowledge, I actually did a bit of a media roundup, read through all of RNZ's coverage, all of Stuff's coverage, and all of the Herald's coverage on this. And I think it's interesting in terms of what you're saying, Kyle, in terms of like the bringing of these far right narratives to our shores and sort of seeding them in, and stuff like that. Because like Winston is doing that, but I think what's been really interesting about the way that this story has been covered throughout this week is that the actual impacts or the actual meaning of what it is that Winston's proposing has been entirely left to one side. So when you look through the reporting, right? So there is this draft bill that is set to introduce two new sections to the Legislation Act, which is a sort of meta piece of legislation that gives you sort of guiding principles on how to interpret other laws. Like an easy example of what the Legislation Act does is that it says that any reference to one gender is a reference to the other. So if there is an old law that says any man who does XYZ commits an offence, the Legislation Act is like, just by the way, that also includes women or like whoever, right? So that's sort of like what's on the cards. And Winston has been saying, oh, well, this is going to basically reverse the changes that were made to the Births, Deaths, and Marriages Registration Act, which allows people to update their birth sex without having to appear in front of a judge, which was the previous model that was in place. And that this is going to change how prison housing works and this, that, and the other. And having looked at just the draft text of the bill, I really struggled to see how it in its current form would do that, but obviously the text of the bill can change as it sort of makes its way through parliament. So that's kind of much of a muchness. But what has been interesting is that so Corinne Dan had the first interview with Winnie about this and asked some very basic questions about what does this actually mean? right? Like, how would this be enforced? Would you have biological testing of, suspect women to establish whether they are cis or trans? And Winston, absolutely lost his shit at Corindan for having the tenacity to do so, and started threatening RNZ's funding and things like that. And that's been really interesting because in every subsequent article that I looked at, and in fairness, I stopped once I had finished the Herald and stuff. I didn't do One News, so I might not be taking in all of the views. But in every article that, like, news, straight news article that I reviewed about this since, there is no question of what would those changes mean if they happened. So, for example, if this law was to place trans women prisoners in men's prisons, there is no discussion of the fact that that is effectively a de facto system of sexual slavery within prisons is what that creates, right? When trans women are put into men's prisons, at best, you get your entire stay in solitary, which is a form of torture and is ruinous to people's mental health, right? That is the best case scenario. At worst, you get housed in a double bunk with a cis man who effectively has carte blanche to rape you for as long as they want, so long as the guards don't really care that much. And we have seen, like, this has been studied in various sort of jurisdictions. I think Australia is the nearest one that we actually have good data on this. But the placement of trans women in certain double cells is used as a system of reward and punishment to manage other prisoners. This is a system that's called V-coding. So basically, and again, comes back to a de facto system of sexual slavery that, in order to pacify and mollify some of these scarier male inmates in a prison, they will just give them a trans woman to be their bitch, and hope that that will sort of diffuse some of the tension from the difficult and dangerous to manage prisoner that they're concerned about, right? That is not discussed. Like, the implications of what this actually means and what this would mean for trans women has not been discussed since the most basic questions of, like, would this include biological testing? Because of the sort of shots over the bow that Winston Peters threw at RNZ. And what's interesting is that there's been a lot of discussion of Corryn Dan's honor as a journalist and whether it was okay for Winston to do this, that, or the other thing. But what is not discussed is, doesn't this policy, as it's been expressed, isn't this necessarily going to lead to systemic sexual violence towards trans people? Which it absolutely will, right? A lot of this is coming off the back of this judgment that's happened recently in the UK, which I haven't read and I don't particularly want to get into, but it's basically done sort of what Winnie is trying to achieve with this bill. And then the very next day, British Transport Police came out and said that, okay, if you're a trans woman and you get searched bodily, you are being searched by a male officer now. So, as I understand it, that would even include, for example, if you were a trans person who's had a vaginoplasty, is that you are going to have PC Plod sticking his fingers in there if it's a cavity search, right? This is, again, a system of de facto legalized sexual assault is what these sorts of laws would create. But instead of actually focusing on that, we've had discussion again about, is this a distraction? We've had discussion about, does this represent, the views of a number of people, and therefore, isn't this just part of democracy, right? What we haven't had discussed is that this bill is directly trying to increase the level of violence, and particularly sexual violence, that is faced in everyday life by trans women. And it's been remarkable how that has been elided in all of this coverage. The best responses that we've seen to this has been from Chloe Swarbrick, who talks about how, we stand with our trans whānau, and this is an imported culture war distraction, right? And that it's not good that this is victimizing a small group of people. But again, there's not that same discussion of, like, how is this victimizing that group of people? What would this actually mean? Like, let's talk about it. Let's get, Winston to defend the fact that he wants to increase practices that will absolutely lead to the physical and sexual assault of more people in this country. So I think that's been sort of very interesting to see. And again, by coming at Corryn Dan, and sort of playing the man, not the ball, all of it is the discussion is now about the man and not the ball. And so, subsequent reporting of the same story that we've seen and stuff, there's been a lot of copy editing and headlines referring to this as a gender bill, as opposed to an anti-trans bill, for example, right? There has been a lot of inclusion of really stupid far-right talking points, like Ingrid Hipkiss asking Chippy once again on air, what is a woman? And Chippy, because he's a fucking idiot, being completely unable to answer or deal with the question. Or stuff in its reporting, I think this is Bridie Whitten's good work, including the fact at the end of the story about Winston Peters' gender bill, which again, they don't bother discussing any of the implications of, finishing that article with a paragraph about how, like, 2 years ago, Chippy couldn't answer a what is a woman question. So what has been interesting to me about, I guess, all of this discourse and all of this dialogue is sort of, on the one hand, this is coming from Winston, who is a fucking lunatic, and Winston's supporters, who are also fucking lunatics. However, this has also been supported by the ACT Party. We also know that there is a decent, if not an overwhelming, majority of the National Party who are absolutely in favor of this kind of shit. They're just smart enough not to talk about it. But because of the way that I think editors, primarily in New Zealand newsrooms, have responded to this story, what has happened is that we're talking about the outrageous behavior of Winston Peters, and we're not talking about what is being proposed or what would be to be done were this to go through. And so, in a way, the media is kind of naturalizing this as a legitimate concern, right? Oh, this is re representative of a legitimate group of people and things of that nature. I mean, there's a small group of people who probably have really strong feelings about having to share like a toilet with black people as well, right? We don't consider that to be a legitimate interest group. And yet by having this focus on, this court drama, what does X politician say? What does Y politician say? Was Winston Peters in breach of the cabinet manual? All of the actual substance of what is being proposed has been completely naturalized in our reporting. And that is really scary to me, much more than the sort of Winston Peters of it all, is the willingness of New Zealand media to naturalize these talking points. And I find that really concerning because once that starts happening, I think it is a very quick and easy acceleration from there to this being sort of massaged into mainstream political discourse and opinion, without ever really being challenged in the slightest.
Yeah, well, we've already had Hipkins, rather than, bringing up some of these points that you've made, which are very easy, and obvious points to make about what the impacts of what such a bill would do, right? It's just to say, oh, it's not a priority. We want to focus on cost of living. Like, it's not a priority of yours to stop, like, the fucking fascist creep and the outright violent attack on a group within your society. What do you mean by that? Right? Like, no one's asking you to go and write your own bill to try and like defeat this bill or anything, but be fucking prepared to just stomp these people when they're asking you these stupid fucking questions and to like show solidarity with people in your community.
And to address it directly as well, because like I understand the this is a distraction line, and I kind of understand what people are trying to do with that, but it can easily create this perception that you don't want to, are unable to, are scared to actually talk about this on its merits. And that's a real problem because again, that creates space for, somebody like Winston Peters to go, well, why aren't they going to discuss this on their merits? Are they scared of having this discussion? They're not able to. Ergo, we've actually touched on some kind of uncomfortable truth. And the difficulty with something like Chris Hipkins, who, like I genuinely think is transphobic. Like I don't think he loves the dolls at all. By, yeah, refusing to address this and just be like, oh, it's not a priority, as opposed to this is a disgusting attack on some of our most vulnerable people. This is actually directly going to lead to increased sexual violence. Yeah, I
Which
don't
is
know.
easy, which is easy to say. I just like this is the main thing for me. Like that is a, I mean, you just on a podcast where we're just talking about like current events, you just gave a one line sentence for what every ostensibly left wing politician should respond to this shit with, right? Like if some if a media interviewer is transphobic enough to like throw the what is a woman question at you, you should just slap them down, like and. that line is the perfect thing to do it with, right? Like, no, you're attacking one of our most vulnerable groups, and what you're proposing would increase sexual violence against that group. Like, go and look at the fucking studies, right?
Just saying that that's a bad faith question, being like,
Yeah.
I understand that you were doing this to get a soundbite. I'm not going to give that to you.
Yeah, like, you can even do that,
Like
right? Like, it's really low
there,
bar.
it is such a low bar to clear. And yet, on the one hand, we have the leader of our largest opposition party who just seems primarily to be just uninterested in any of this, and a media ecosystem where clearly, like, transphobes in decent positions of leadership, whether it's, I don't know, the people at the Herald, whether it's somebody like Luke Malpass, and stuff, like, where people are just willing to accept and naturalize these propaganda points that are being laid out.
And
Anyway, that's
also,
my whole spiel about that.
oh, good. I think the other thing to
Sabinus
keep.
knows that as well. He
Oh, yeah.
knows that as soon as he does something outrageous, like attack, RNZ's funding, that the story will be about that. He's a veteran politician. The fact that they then pick it up and run with it and just play into his hands is, it's disturbing.
Well, I
And
mean,
you're totally
because they're on
right.
the same
Like,
side.
I think Angela pointed out something, which is so pertinent to this, which is that no trans people are ever talked to. And also trans men don't exist apparently ever in this discussion, and people just don't have really basic education about it. I mean, like, being a trans woman is to be a kind of hypothetical degendered person. It's always being a political subject, but it's not actually having any kind of agency or subjectivity as a moral agent within the world that actually exists. It's not like this is a could be a friend. This could be somebody who is a kid in school. This could be somebody who is, your barista. It is your barista, by the way. I just thought you should know, if you don't think you've ever met a trans person before, it's your barista. I'm sorry you had to find out this way. But it is exactly that, right? And it's just, I mean, I couldn't have put it better myself. You talked about the consequences, I think, really beautifully, Angela, and it is such an ugly subject. But if you really want to come out with it, like, if you want to do it, you start off with the provocative thing, and then people ask you, what do you mean? You say, I can't believe Winston Peters is a pro-rapist. And people are like, wait, what? And then you start to explain what that
Pretty easy.
means.
This is classic comms.
Also, stop using the exact same rubric as them, because, for example, when people say, like, the response to this has always been, oh, well, just because somebody's not a biological woman doesn't mean that they're not a woman. And it's like, well, do you think that this is a really airy fairy thing? What do you think gender is? How does this work? What do you think medical transition does? Because the point of hormone therapy is that it changes your biology. That is what it does. It makes you, it induces second puberty. It changes your body. It does these things irrevocably. There is no reason to pick out one particular component of biological sex and then ignore all of the expression to say that, oh, they oftentimes talk about, like, large gametes, small gametes, or something like that. There is no point in picking on something like, oh, let's go even worse, chromosomes. You don't walk around with karyotype vision. You can't see people's chromosomes. There are cis women who have XY chromosomes, but you wouldn't know it because the downstream expression, scientifically speaking, is that which you would read as being female, right? According to human pattern recognition, most of the time. And again, setting aside all of the so many edge cases, which are real human beings, people who might be androgynous in some sense, people who might be gender non-conforming, or not even that. They might just be a butch lesbian and some idiot, like 50-year-old white man from Waiheke Island can't tell the difference, So there is all of that, right? But you can't pick on this one particular thing, because the whole purpose of what, like, in particular, medical transition does is that everything downstream from it is giving different instructions to the cells. It does everything differently. Everybody who talks about, quote unquote, a biological woman is, like, both sociologically and scientifically illiterate. And
But
I
that's the
think you
point,
need to
well, right?
educate them, and you need to call them out about it.
Mm.
There is no
I
such
just
thing.
completely tell talker to that, and I think what has been really interesting in building on what you've just said there, Simon, is that the one word that has absolutely not come up, aside from any trans person's word, is the word cis, right? Like,
Yes.
when we talk about trans people and people who are not trans, we use the phrase cis. This is like a term that, as I understand it, comes primarily from like Latin and chemistry, where you talk about cis and trans optical isomers.
Oh, Angela, we are actually not allowed to use slurs on this podcast.
No, we are.
And therein lies the rub, right? Because this comes back to what you were saying, Simone, about how to be a trans woman is to be this degendered sort of agencyless kind of actor, right? And in terms of, you know, dehumanizing people, setting up a dichotomy where one is either biologically real or one is not, that is very much the first step for creating the trans woman as the subject who doesn't exist in a fully human way in which everybody else does.
It's purely fascist. It's purely fascist.
Yeah. And as you say, you know, like the reason I presume that none of the coverage has used the term cisgender, like at all, is because that the editors are, firstly, they don't care, but secondly, even if they did, they're concerned about media council complaints. And again, you know, talking about captured institutions, like, I don't know what the media council's recent take on the use of cis as a descriptive term is, but you can absolutely see how that is ground that is already sort of being seeded by refusing to like actually stick to your principles, be like, this is the descriptive language that we have that exists, let's run with this. But it's like, no, we are just going to adopt these terms. And again, by adopting these terms, you naturalize all of the bad things about which we are talking.
And the thing is, you know, we can talk about not being like it being set up as a distraction or not being a priority or whatever the fuck people want to do. But we've actually passed that point now, because both the UK and the US, you know, two of our fucking Western partners who we share values with, are all in on this shit. They are, and alongside that, we know this is the leading edge of fascism. This is the first wave of dehumanization that is being used against a vulnerable group to systematize and institutionalize an attack on a part of society. And that doesn't stop, right? Like in the UK, within what, 2 days, it was just women being attacked. Right, like we're like not even getting into this like descriptors stuff. It's just, it is, the purpose of this is not purely to attack one vulnerable group. It is to erode the institutional and societal norms to get people used to attacking vulnerable groups. And that aside, you know, this is like the big long that shouldn't even matter, to be clear. Like it shouldn't matter that that's why they're doing it. We should push back against this just for what it's doing in the present day. But we can look at the UK and the US and see what has already been done and say, okay, look, maybe this is a fucking priority. Maybe we don't want that here. And maybe we don't want this stuff weaponized against eventually everyone who doesn't agree with far-right fascism.
I think you're misremembering the Niemöller poem, Kyle, because if I recall correctly, it was something along the lines of, first they came for the trade unionists and I didn't do anything because, you know, fuck them. And then they were happy and they stopped and I lived my life.
Oh,
and
no, you're right.
There was nothing I had to deal with past that.
I was just going to say, I believe that most people understand the Niemöller poem as first they came for the communists, and that was a problem because it would eventually lead to me, but they're not people.
But this is the thing, right? I don't like the Niemöller poem because we should be fighting back against this on its own basis. Like, it shouldn't be about it reaching you. But also, that is what the plan is, and we should be very clear-eyed about that.
If you want a good flat white in the future.
Yeah, we're running out of time, but, well, I guess all I can say is I wish that the fucking major institutions and centre-left, ostensibly centre-left, I hate to have to use the word ostensibly because fuck them, groups would actually fucking do something. And actually stand with people and understand solidarity again. Because that's what it really comes down to. Like, go and talk to some trans people.
I'm a little surprised that the Greens have dropped the ball on this because they don't have much going for them except for social liberalism. And I'm a little surprised that they don't say, hey, we're having, you know, a press conference with one of our co-leaders. And actually then it's like, no, I'm not speaking. This trans person next to me is going to talk to you and you have to listen to them. You know, I'm a little surprised that they haven't like talked to people about some of the rhetorical strategies that can be employed. And you know, like again,
Well, I think.
if people on a podcast can like point this stuff out, then you know, how come they can't?
Well, I think you raise a really good point, Simone. And I don't want to be devil's advocate for the Green Party because they're perfectly capable of doing that themselves. But I think it is noteworthy, though, that like all of this has happened not what 2 weeks after Winston Peters, in conjunction with New Zealand's press institutions, hounded the Greens only trans MP out of Wellington, right? Like, you know, whipped up a harassment campaign bad enough that, you know, this poor bastard has to have private fucking security now. You know, like these two things I think are not entirely disconnected. And I can understand for the Greens how it might make them trepidatious about bringing up a trans person for that. I was thinking, like, as I was going through all of these stories and like looking for the singular trans voice, is that on the one hand, like, it's absurd that they don't seem to have gotten anybody, but on the same time, like, I can see it taking 3 or 4 phone calls to get somebody from our community to agree to stick their head over the parapet
But it's
at
also
this
like,
moment.
you know, even if you are an institution, like in the political space, and you want to put these voices first, there's no guarantee that it's going to be more widely read or in the media, right? Like you're having to go via alternative media, platforms. You're having to build your own media pipeline around this stuff. So yeah, there are many factors here. I mean, everyone can just listen to one of 200. That's always an option for people as well. But there are also, you know, there are other people out there in groups as well who have been trying to get this stuff out. But this is, you know, this has been the main, or one of the main facets of this conversation today, right? Is that it is this huge media carousel as well, that is pushing this narrative. It is not solely because one crazy old man, Winston Peters, is throwing this shit into the national discourse. There is a whole institutionalized machine that is not just promoting hate narratives, but is throwing away all its what are meant to be its values and its role as a member of society, as the fourth estate, to do this. And I do think people are taking some time to catch up with that. And in some ways, fair enough, right? Like, it is a shocking thing to be happening. And people don't understand how to push back against something that's so much bigger than them. But at the same time, people in leadership, in particular, political leaders, need to get up to fucking date and understand what's really happening here and fucking do something about it, because that's the only way we move forward. Like, otherwise, you're getting to a point where, you know, you have ICE agents or whatever becomes New Zealand's pseudo layer of black shirt enforcement, knocking on people's doors to drag people off God knows where, because they are the particular group that is being dehumanized at the moment. Like that's just genuinely where this ends up, folks. I like there's literally no argument against that at this point.
And I think, speaking of that leading edge of American fascism, yeah, I just wanted to touch on a story that I've you know sent out and things like that. I think it's in the One of 200 server that is relatively recent. CNBC just updated the story an hour ago that the FBI has arrested two judges on grounds that, well, CNBC says escalating Trump immigration crackdown, which is certainly a way of putting that. They are alleged to have assisted people who were the subject of ICE raids, right? Now, you might be aware that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that kind of Bush era creature, this, you know, American Gestapo has been arresting people at courthouses. In other words, you know, this kind of preventing people from even accessing their due process in a way that really salts the wound and really thumbs its nose at the idea of due process, right? Like, no, you won't even get to be seen before a judge. We're just going to take you away. But there is one in particular, Hannah Duggan, who is a Wisconsin judge. Who's now being charged by the FBI and was arrested. So they're arresting judges in America now. And the allegation is that she was accused of helping an undocumented immigrant evade arrest. This came one day after federal authorities arrested a former New Mexico judge and his wife in relation to them allegedly harboring an undocumented immigrant, and again with ties to Tren de Aragua. So they're using these kind
Wait,
of trumped up
anti-gang
gang.
rhetoric? Where have I heard that before?
Exactly, right? You know, this notion of gangs, this notion of scary foreign brown people, right? And I think that this one was especially egregious because the allegation is that she, in quote, unintentionally misdirected federal agents away from this man who was the subject of an ICE raid when they were attempting to arrest him at her courthouse. Now, I think you might be aware, if you've seen any of these videos on social media, that these supposed ICE agents oftentimes don't have badges, don't have any sort of identification. They are indistinguishable from a deputized fascist militia from some of these kind of crazy far right, I suppose modern Klan types, right, who have just decided in their small town that they are going to be the big tough man with all of their tactical gear, right, and have nothing legitimate about them seemingly. So on this day, supposedly Duggan, quote, became visibly angry after learning that ICE agents were waiting in the hallway to arrest this man Flores Ruiz after a hearing in his criminal battery case, according to a sworn affidavit unsealed Friday. Duggan and another judge are alleged to have entered the hallway and confronted the arrest team, telling one deportation officer that he needed a judicial warrant to make an arrest. And you know, the other tellings of the story say that she asked him, "Do you have a warrant to do this?" And they said, "No, we don't have a judicial warrant. We have an administrative warrant." And to the judge, this was unlawful. So what she then did was, after she returned to her courtroom, she allowed him, this man who was the subject of this raid, to go through a jury room and exit out another part of the courthouse. Obviously, believing that these supposed ICE agents were acting unlawfully, right? And on an unlawful basis. And for doing that, what's happened is that she's been arrested and now she's been released on bond. But that means that she spent at least one night in jail, right? A judge in the United States for having wanted to hew to the rule of law. This is a deeply concerning development for a number of reasons. The open contempt that the Trump administration has for the judiciary in the United States is staggering. And if that can happen to somebody like that, who is supposed to uphold the law on the basis that they are trying to carry out their program of human trafficking, the Trump administration, that is, it should concern everybody that a red line has been crossed.
And it's a chilling effect as well, right? It's not
Yes.
just, hey, we're going to arrest everyone. It is, hey, we've arrested someone. And sometimes the cameras in the fucking jail cells go out.
And this is why the director of the FBI has made comment on this story personally, that the FBI handles a large number of cases. The director of the FBI doesn't comment on them. There is a reason why, and you've just pinpointed it. It is a chilling effect. The intention of arresting and rounding up judges is exactly for this reason. And I think that this is a revenge against some federal judges stymieing the efforts of the Trump administration by noting that they haven't followed due process in their deportations of just, random people to an El Salvadoran slave prison, CECOP.
What a wonderful place to finish the episode. I think, the main thing to underline here is you actually need to act, everybody.
Yes.
You actually need to be understanding what track we are on. And if you're in a position of power, institutional or otherwise, but especially if you're a politician, you need to be open, about what is happening here and do what you can, which is much more than you're currently doing, all of you, to put the brakes on it, and to move it back in the other direction. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Simone.
Thank you. If you, I think you pointed something out that's really good, which is, and not to, put these words in your mouth, these are my words, but if you need to get good, like rather than just letting people know their rights, because these ICE agents don't care about people's rights, you need to know people in your community, especially the more vulnerable ones, and you need to get good at de-arresting with a whole lot of other people, and you need to have community defense. And in some areas, depending on the area of danger that you're in, I would suggest what the Black Panthers did, which was to get very good with arms for community and self-defense. Not for any other purpose, purely for that. That is legal in the United States. It is okay. And it seems that it is becoming increasingly necessary.
And thank you, Angela, for joining us again.
Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to say two things. Firstly, in addition to, you know, if you're a politician in a position of leadership, you need to act. If you're Chris Hipkins, there is another option, which is you could just fucking resign. And I also wanted to say that it's not great living at the thin end of the wedge, but at least we get to be skinny.
Well, you do. Oh, God.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. There is media out there talking about this stuff. I wish it was in broader mainstream media, but it's not. Let people know that it's happening. And share, like, subscribe, give us some money, get on board, take some actions, join an organization that understands these things, and get to work. We'll catch you next time.
If artifices are denied, live in a pointless life, but learning all your lessons from your politics, there's no distinction. The words apart now is paid with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they criticize a cost me ought to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day in this vindictive, forgetful fucking race.